Good evening, everybody, and thank you for coming to hear Rav Sassoon and Rabbi Travis this evening. Happy Hanukkah, and we want to thank Beis Tefila for having us. And if anybody else has a recording device, now would be the time to bring it up. You're here to hear Rav Sassoon and Rav Travis. I was asked to introduce the last minute, so I apologize. I guess without delay, we're going to have Rav Sassoon come. Thank you.
Hanukkah Sameach, everybody. When we think about the Hagim, and we say, which Hag is related to miracles, we always think of Hanukkah, and Purim sometimes. But that's strange, because Pesach, the miracles on Pesach were so much greater, Kiryat Yam Suf, the 10 plagues. So what do we think about Hanukkah when we talk about, like, we say Nes Hanukkah, like, we don't say Nes Pesach. We think about Hanukkah. Another question I have is, Hanukkah we say Hallel Gamor for 8 days. Pesach we only say for 1 day, even though Pesach is so much greater. Sukkot we say 8 days of Hallel Gamor also. It's Midoraisa. But the strange thing is, the Rambam, when he brings down the halachas of Hallel, he brings him down in Hanukkah instead of Sukkot, which would be much more appropriate, but Sukkot is Doraisa, and the miracles are greater, the Anane Kavod and everything that went with it. So why is Hallel attached to Hanukkah more than any other Hagid? And Hanukkah is only Midrabanan, and the miracles aren't as great as the big miracles we had from the Doraisa Dika holidays. So to explore that question, I want to explore the relationship between Nes and Nisayon, because Nes is a word, root word for Nisayon. So what's the relationship? Nes also means banner. It shows who a person is when it overcomes Nisayon. But what Nes got to do with it? So if you imagine a circle, this circle represents a person. Anything within the circle is within his capabilities, it's his comfort zone. So if a Nisayon happens within the circle, it's not really a Nisayon, it's just another routine for him. He's used to it. If a Nisayon happens outside of the circle, it's beyond his capabilities. He won't be able to overcome it. So that's also not a Nisayon. So when is a Nisayon? When it's exactly at the border, at the perimeter of the circle, at the circumference. But if that's where the Nisayon is, then you don't know, is he going to make it or not make it? If he goes full out, is he going to make it? It'll be a push-pull. So how is he going to overcome? The Gemara asks, the Amoraim, the Gemara asks, they say in the previous generations the rabbis were zochet to nisim, and we're not zochet to nisim like they were. What's the difference? Why were they zochet to nisim and we're not? So the answer, because they were moser nefesh. When you moser nefesh, it causes a nes to happen. So you go all out, you go to your full capabilities to the edge of that circle that represent your limitations, and you moser nefesh to get there. You moser nefesh together. What happens? A nes happens. What's a nes? Hashem comes in. He helps you. and you overcome, and your circle gets bigger. Your border gets bigger. You become a greater person. That's how nefesh happens. When you are moser nefesh, you cause Hashem to come in to help, and you become greater. And you conquer whatever was limiting you before, and you have new, wider borders, and you become a greater person. And that's just what Nisayim is for. And it shows who you are. That's the nest that called the banner. That's the relationship. And then you go to a bigger Nisayim, and you're Moser Nefesh, and Hashem comes in, and you get bigger. So, I want to explore, if we want Nisim in our lives, we have to be Moser Nefesh. What does it mean to be Moser Nefesh? It's not just that you go all out. There's a case I had, there was a bus I had to make one day, and I just had to make it, and I ran as fast as I could to the bus stop to catch the bus, and I said, Hashem, I'm doing the maximum. You have to help me. I got there just as I got to the bus stop sprinting, the bus takes off. So what happened? But all of a sudden, a car pulls up right behind me. Hop on, I'll take you to the next bus stop. I saw you running for the bus, and I made it. Yes, that's how it works. But you know what to be Moser Nefesh, what does Moser mean? To transfer, to give over. You're giving over your Nefesh. What is the Nefesh? What is your Nefesh? The Nefesh is the lowest part of the soul. There's five parts of the soul. There's Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, as is well known in the Sfarim. That's where the ego is. And to understand what the Nefesh is, I want to go back to Gan Eden, when Adam and Chava ate from the tree. And then we'll know how to most of that. When Hashem planted the trees, the Chumash says, was Etz HaChaim Betoch HaGan VeEtz HaDav Tov Vera. Etz HaChaim Betoch HaGan VeEtz HaDav Tov Vera. And Chazal said, what does Betoch mean? In the middle. Which tree was in the middle? It's ambiguous. It says Etz HaChaim in the middle of the Gan and the Etz HaDav Tov Vera. That means they were both in the middle. If they're both in the middle, then how could that be? So Chazal said they're the same tree. Etz HaChaim, Etz HaDav, they were the same tree. They were both in the middle. It has to be the same tree. But we know it's two trees. One tree gives life and one tree gives death. How could it be the same tree? We'll look at how Hashem commanded the Tzivui to Adam, and we'll see how it could become two trees. When he told Adam not to eat from a tree, he says, "Ni'etz adat tovera lo tochel." Don't eat from the etz adat tovera. Now, when the Nachash comes to Chava, and she asks, the Nachash asks, gets her to speak about the tree. She said, "Hashem said you can eat from all the trees, but mipriya etz asher betoch hagan lo tochel. You can't eat from the fruit of the tree that's in the middle of the gan." So you can make an equation. Don't eat from the Etz HaDat Tov Vera equals don't eat from the fruit of the tree that's in the middle of the gan. What do we see here? We see that Chava emphasized the fruit. The fruit, if you focus on the fruit of the tree that's in the middle of the gan, that's called Etz HaDat Tov Vera. But all Hashem says is don't eat from the Etz HaDat Tov Vera, and that's defined by focusing on the fruit. So comes that if you focus on the fruit, the tree is Etz HaDat Tov Vera. If you don't focus on the fruit, but you look at the tree as a whole, it's Etz HaChaim. Your perspective changes the tree. So we have to know what is a fruit. The fruit is the produce of the tree. It's what we want from the tree. It's our desires, our goals. And once you have a goal in life, or what you want in life, you also have tov vera, good and bad. Because whatever gets you closer to your goal is good. Whatever gets you further away from your goal is bad. The ultimate good is to get close to Hashem, and the bad is to get further away from Hashem. That's called morality. But in our lives, you know, getting close to Hashem is one of our goals. So there's good and bad, and there's judgment. All of a sudden, once you have goals, you have judgment. Before it from the tree, there was no good or bad, because there were no goals. In fact, the Rambam asks, how could it be that Adam sinned and he benefits? Before he ate from the tree, he didn't know anything about good and bad, and now he does. When you sin, your consciousness should shrink, it shouldn't expand. He's benefiting. He answered, it's not true. Because before he ate from the tree, everything was true or false. Everything was reality. Everything was so clear, there was no good or bad. He gives an example. The world is round, it's true. You don't call it good. The world is flat, it's false. If you don't say, it's bad. Everything was so clear to him, the mitzvah was true. And an avera was unthinkable because it's false, it's sheker. So you have to go out of your way to do something that's a sheker. That was his consciousness. And once he ate from the tree, his consciousness shrank. Hazal say, before he ate from the tree, he was humanity as a whole. It says he went from one end of the universe to the other, from heavens to earth. That was his size, because he was humanity. But once he ate from the tree, he became the personal human being like we are, with a personal perspective. Now he says, only I'm looking at things. The food causes you, your goals cause you to have your own personal perspective. The way you judge things, is it good for me, is it bad for me? Is it good for the Jews or not? So the food limits your consciousness. Your goals limited. And this limitation is what your nefesh is. It's your identity. It's all your desires. It's all your beliefs. Those put limits on your infinite self. If you think you're a mother that has lots of patience and good at playing the piano and this kind of personality, and you identify with that, those are limitations, really. And your beliefs about what life is like and how life should function, that also puts a limit. And the snake says that when you eat from the tree, you'll be like God. And what does Rashi say there? You'll create your own world. You'll be like God because God creates worlds, and you'll create worlds. How you create your world? You create your own reality by deciding which kind of thoughts, which kind of perception, which kind of illusions you're going to believe in. And that would be a reality. Like an optimistic person lives in a much nicer reality than a pessimistic person, because the way he views the world is much brighter. So that's his reality. A pessimist person has a darker idea of reality. He suffers in life much more. He can't be as happy, because you create your reality. Now, why this is so important is because people believe the illusions to be the reality. Once they ate from the tree, they live in illusion. They think they live in an objective world. We believe we live in an objective world, that the outside world is beyond our control and it affects us, and we have no choice but to be victims of what happened in the outside world. But it's not true. Our experience of life does not depend on outside events. It depends on how we interpret outside events. It depends on our feelings and thoughts of the outside events. So if you have negative feelings about it, it'll be a negative experience. If it's positive, it'll be a positive experience. I'll give you an example. Let's say your child comes to you and you happen to be in a bad mood and he's acting up. So you just let go and you shout at him. But if you're in a good mood, you'll find a way to humor him, to get him out of his craziness. Exact same action, two different responses. What caused the change? Was your mood. What were you thinking, feeling at the time? So once you ate from the tree, you have to know that everything is subjective. Everything became subjective according to your desires, according to your limitations, according to your identity that you created. And that's called the nefesh. The ego is the nefesh. That's the map of reality that you created, the nefesh. And the good news is, because it's how you think and feel about the world that creates experience, you could change it. It's in your control. You could create your own reality. And I'll give you an example, because people form beliefs and how the world works from many different things, from childhood, from the culture they live in, the society they live in, what they're taught in school, experiences they have, and how they happen to interpret it. So I want to bring an example from childhood, because a lot of it happens in childhood, because the child doesn't analyze it critically. It just sucks in, you know, the energy in the atmosphere, and that's how it lives. So let's say a mother on Shabbos asks a child to bring a serving plate, and he brings it in, but he drops it and it shatters, and she yells at him, "What did you do?" If the child says, "Oh, I dropped the plate," I get yelled at. It must be bad to make mistakes. So he has a belief now. It's bad to make mistakes from this experience. So if he formed that belief, how he grew up in life, he won't take risks in life. He'll always go with the crowd, because that's how he believes the world works. If he says to himself, "I'm not good enough, I can't do anything right," he'll grow up with no self-confidence. And if he does succeed, it'll be luck. If he fails, further proof that he's not good enough, because that's how he colors the world. But if he had said to himself, "Okay, I'm a kid. When I grow up, I'll be bigger and stronger. I won't drop it," then this event won't affect him at all. So, as an adult, the child could analyze it and let those beliefs go, or let those feelings go, and he'll have a whole different outlook on life. And your beliefs actually just, you filter out things that don't go with it, and you accept things that go with it, and that colors your complete experience of life. And when you moser nefesh, what you do is you drop those limitations. What's holding the limitations right there? What's holding it? That your beliefs. Your belief is limiting. Your perspective is keeping your circle the way it is. To be moser nefesh is to give it over to God. This is what I call surrender always. To surrender to God. What are you surrendering? You're surrendering your ego. You're surrendering what you thought were your limitations. You change your view of life. So you let that go. And what happens when you drop it and you surrender it? Your consciousness expands. You were limiting yourself before. So in the Levaya for my children, I said, the only way to survive this tragedy is to surrender totally to Hashem. And what that meant was, is I surrendered my desire for my children to be alive. If I held on to the fact that I want my children to be alive, and it has to be this way, I won't accept any other way. And not only that, everything was for them. I invested so much in everything, you know, also all my Torah, everything I believed, I surrendered that to Hashem. Because if I didn't, I'll go crazy. I'll fall apart. I won't overcome the design whatsoever. But when I surrender, what do I surrender? I surrender my limitations, my tunnel vision of how life should be. So when you do that, your consciousness expands. Hashem came in. He made a mess. I'm able to function. I'm able to laugh. I could speak publicly. I was a public speaker before. And this is really shocking to everybody. People tell me, "You're so strong." And it's not true. The secret is to surrender to Hashem. And then you have Hashem make a nest for you. He's always there waiting, but you have to invite him in. And the only way to invite him in is to let go of your illusions, of all your thoughts. And what, however pure your thoughts are and correct they are, relative to infinite, the illusions. There is always constant growth. Even in Torah learning, you have pshat, that's correct, but you let go of that pshat, you could get a deeper pshat. So when you surrender, you have ness. And it's also not pure ness, it's also very logical. Because you're more clear, your emotions are not in the way. You see things that you wouldn't have seen before. I have new gifts in life to open that I wouldn't have seen before. So people ask me, okay, so what positive thought would you replace with the negative thought? It's dangerous to go out there now. There's so many stabbings going on. People are staying home. So I answered, if you replace a positive thought with a negative thought, it's more helpful. You'll have a better life. You live better, you live more efficiently. But you're replacing in the end one illusion for another illusion. You're replacing a more useful illusion with a less useful illusion. So let's analyze this. There was, let's say, four stabbings happening. One stabbing here, one stabbing there, in a span of a week. That's the reality. That's objective reality. Four stabbings happened. You create interpretation is dangerous. The world is falling apart. You can't go out there. And you get scared. That's already your thoughts. That's your perspective. So if you have that perspective, you go out, you'll be scared. You can't go out. But if you realize that that's just your thoughts, it's only your feelings, you surrender that question, you let it go, you're more sensitive. What happens? What's the truth? There's nothing but Hashem. Everything is Hashem. That's the ultimate reality. Without any illusion. But everything is Hashem. And there's no other power besides Hashem. If you realize that for real, and you go out, you won't be scared. You'll be calm. So the terrorists won't attack you. Because they usually attack people that they feel are scared. They're easy targets. You won't be an easy target. Not only that, you'll be clear. So you'll notice things that you wouldn't have noticed if you were scared and you're looking in the wrong places. You're looking all around and you miss the signs. But if you're calm and confident, you know everything's from Hashem, you'll notice things and you could take appropriate action. So just being in a state of surrender, you're much more clear. You do the right thing. Because you're not clouded. But besides that, there's Siyata Dishmaya. There's Hashgacha practice that happens. Because you let Hashem run your life. You see, the ego is an illusion. And because it's an illusion, you're always controlling things. You're always doing things to get to your goals. And you're always like Haman in the Tanakh is the greatest control freak in history. He's called Memuchan. He's the one who's always preparing. He's getting Vashti killed. He's putting the edge. He's doing everything. He's Amalek. He's the snake that went into the body. And we confuse our Yetzirah's thoughts with our real thoughts. And we believe our thoughts. When you believe your thoughts, you give it power. It becomes reality for you. So you just have to let it go. You don't have to let it go. Just even look at it and you could just say, okay, that's just the thought. You don't have to believe it. You don't have to buy into it. But in the end, Haman, everything he did, every step he did in the end was his own destruction. Because that's reality. That's reality. So if you know that from the beginning, you don't have to control things. Hashem comes in, he does everything for you. That's really the secret of having bitachon and making hashgacha practice happen. That's how you live. It's a paradigm shift. When you let Hashem run your life, you'll run your life. But you can't, if you're worried, that means you're not really letting run your life. You have to let go of that worry and trust him. And realize that it's nothing but Hashem. And then he'll come in and he'll help you. He'll make a nest. And even in the history of Israel, every war was fought, I was told, when the Israelis thought everything is lost. Because until you get to the point of everything is lost, you don't completely surrender. You still think you could do something. But when you think it's all gone, there's no hope, and this happens. That's how it works. Because you're forced to surrender. And you don't have to get to that point. You could live like that, lechatchila, to realize that Hashem runs the world, and you have your goals, let's say, but you don't have to control it. You could just let go. Hashem has his way of doing it. And if you get upset, if you have negative thoughts, or if you have negative feelings, you could watch it, be aware of it, and realize you don't have to buy into it. And you'll be clear, and you know what to do, and your actions would be the correct actions. Your idea, you'll be more intuitive, and you do the right thing. So, the Hashmonaim, there were 13 people. They overthrew a Greek army. How did they do that? Because they were Moser Nefesh. Hanukkah is the Chag of Mesirut Nefesh. And that is the Chag of miracles. And when the when we say, you know, in the prayers, in Al Anisim, we say, we thank Hashem for fighting their wars, judging their judgments. But who fought the war? Hashem fought the war? Or the Hashemite fought the war? It's confusing. It's like Hashem fought their wars. It's because it's a partnership. It was together. They went to Moser Nefesh, they brought Hashem in, and they were able to win the war. And this is what the Greeks were actually against. They did not believe that there's room for man in creation. God created the world perfect. They believed in nature. That means there's no room for man. Im lo briti yomam v'layla v'kot shamav aris lo samti. If it weren't for bris, Hashem wouldn't create the world. The whole purpose of creation was for relationship. Bris is a relationship. Avraham Avinu kept all the mitzvahs before it's commanded, except for the bris. Because if you're not commanded, you can't unilaterally do something that's relationship oriented. A bris is all about relationship. You have to wait for it to be commanded. It's a covenant. It's a relationship. He wanted us to be part of the creation, to be creators with him. So the Greek, and the Machlokes again, what's this bris? Is it bris mila or the bris of Torah? But either way, it's bris. And because it's bris, they were both decreed against. Anything that is relationship towards Hashem, Greek wanted to nullify. So Tunus Rufus goes to Rabbi Kiva. He says, what's greater? The creation of man or the creation of God? What are you talking about? We're talking about the bris mila. Man, Hashem created man perfect, and you go ahead and you deform his shape? It's nonsensical what you're doing. So how does Rabbi Kiva answer him? He puts in front of him wheat and cake. Which is greater, the wheat or the cake? So the answer is obvious. Hashem makes the wheat, and man makes cake out of the wheat. Man's creation is obviously greater. That's what Hashem wants. The whole purpose of the nation was for our contribution to the creation. That's what Hashem wants. And that, we do that by being Moser Nefesh and giving all we can give. The Greeks have the Olympics. And what's the Olympic competition about? Who's the strongest? Who's the fastest? It's celebrating God's creation. So in the Western world, you have a phenomenon where the athletes, they endorse products. Which comes from the fact that because when you train, you have to be, that whoever trains stronger is better off. So there's an element of Mr. Nefesh. Whoever is Mr. Nefesh, if a tzaddik endorses a product, you can trust him. Because if he's great in one area, he's great in all areas. Because it's self-mastery of letting go of your illusions. But an athlete who wins, it's usually because he's more genetically endowed. He has longer legs or bigger muscles. That's how he was built. It doesn't show that he's a greater person. It just celebrates Hashem's creation. But by the real glory of Torah, the real light of Torah, and so darkness of Greece is how you moser nefesh, how you maximize your potential, how great you become yourself, how you expand your circle. The Greek way is, as only so many people could be rich, only so many people could be strong, only so many people could be geniuses. Because that, Hashem gives that. Hashem decides. So most people are left out. But the Jewish way, where Hashem needs you to become you, that you have to expand your circle to become who you are to the maximum, that's for everybody. Everybody has a portion in creation. That's the light. There's no darkness. So even in Torah, which is bris, it says in Tehillim, keep it, Torah Hashem hefso ubetorato yegei yomam v'layla. His desire is in Hashem's Torah, and he toils in his own Torah day and night. Is it his Torah or Hashem's Torah? He starts off as being Hashem's Torah, but when you toil in it and you moser nefesh to understand it, and you break some limitations that stopping you from understanding it, then it becomes your Torah. You put your own unique perspective into it. And the strength of the Hashmonaim, where they got their power from, was Torah Shebal Peh. Torah Shebal Peh was what defeated Greek philosophy. What's the difference? Greek philosophy describes nature. It's a description of Hashem's creation. Torah Shebal Peh is something different. It's not even Torah Shebal Kitab. It's the Torah of the Rabbanan. It's our Torah. It's our contribution. That's why it's bris. He wants our perspective. So it's Rabba, it's Abaye, it's named after Moraim and Tanaim. It's a relationship. So there's an astonishing Gemara that talks about a machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim about a certain oven, if it's pure or impure. And if Rabbi Eliezer says it's pure, Chachamim says it's impure. He brings proofs. They reject all his proofs. They don't accept it. They find holes in all of them. So Rabbi Eliezer gets frustrated. You know what? If I'm right, let the carob tree prove I'm right. It uproots itself, replants itself far away. No, we don't accept such miraculous proofs. That's not a proof. Let the river prove I'm right. It starts to flow uphill instead. No. Let the walls of the Beit Midrash fall. It starts falling. Rabbi Yehoshua gets up and says, how could it fall because of machlokes between Chachamim? It starts falling. So one last thing, he gets up. Let the heavens prove I'm right. And you'll know that I'm right. A bas call comes down from heaven. Rabbi Eliezer is right. Rabbi Yehoshua gets up again and goes, Lo b'shamayim hi. The Torah is not in heaven. It was given to us on Har Sinai. And since it was given to us on Har Sinai, it's our perspective that matters. We have to go with our understanding. Eliyahu Navi later saw Hashem. No, they saw Eliyahu Navi later. They asked him, what was Hashem doing at that moment when they rejected the Basko? He said, Hashem was overjoyed. Nitzchuni banai, nitzchuni banai. My kids were victorious over me. Just like the Hashman victorious over the Greeks. They were victorious over me. That's what Hashem wants. He wants our contribution. Our perspective counts. If you're moser nefesh to understand it properly, and it's our contribution that counts. That was the purpose. It was a bris. Torah is bris. And so, the reason why the miracle of Hanukkah is different, is special, is because we made it happen. We were moser nefesh, we made it happen. And we say hallel for that. We thank Hashem for giving us the opportunity to make the mess happen. We don't just say hallel because we're delivered from danger through a miracle, like we say in the Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. But we say hallel for giving us the opportunity to become ourselves, to becoming a greater self, to be moser nefesh and to contribute our unique perspective, our unique self into the creation.
That's why Hallel is said, Gamor is said by Hanukkah even more than the Doraisa holiday, because it's the Rabbanan. It's more. It's our contribution. It's much more valuable to Hashem. It's much more cherished. We say Hallel Gamor for that. And Hoda'ah is the Hallel of Hoda'ah. What's Hoda'ah? Leah had her fourth child, Yehuda, and that's where we learn about Hoda'ah, to thank. Why did she thank Hashem on her fourth child and not the first child? Because everyone knew Yaakov had to have 12 tribes, and he had four wives. I mean, each woman would have three children. That would be their portion. Leah got her fourth child as an extra portion. It's above and beyond everybody's share. That's when she was giving Hoda'ah, because it was her unique contribution to Am Yisrael. It was what she gives, what no one else could give. That was Hoda'ah come from. It's the same idea as Hallel, that we praise Hashem for letting us contribute to the world, to the creation. That's bris, and that's light, and that's light of Hanukkah. The light of Hanukkah is the awareness that you're not limited. These limitations you put on yourself. It's expanding, that's the light. And even Talmud Bavli, it's called darkness, just like the Greeks, because when you approach it, you don't understand it. It's all confusion. Until you break your head and see what you're doing wrong, where you're limiting yourself, what assumptions, mistaken assumptions you're making. And as you toil, the light comes out and you understand it. It starts with the dark, ends up with light. So there's 36 Masechtot in Talmud Bavli, just like there are 36 lights we light on Hanukkah, which is a connected to 36 hours of Oraganus, which is the ultimate awareness that there is for the tzaddiki. Darkness is the darkness of believing in illusions, believing that the outside world is real, believing that there's no portion for you, that it is what it is. But it's, the light is to realize it's not true. You could break away those limitations. You could grow. And that's your contribution. That's through Mesirut Nefesh. The world is subjective, and you could bring light by being Mesirut Nefesh, then you'll be awareness and expanding your consciousness. You could live a miraculous life. You could live with Mesirut Nefesh. You live with surrender. Hashem will be with you, and you don't ever have to feel you're a victim. So I bless everybody here in this Hanukkah, that clarity, in Sud Nefesh. And I was supposed to talk about Chavalei Mashiach, but the reason for Chavalei Mashiach is, I forgot to mention, is to force us to a point to realize that our old paradigm is not working anymore. Everything is falling apart. Everything looks dangerous. You're forced to change your outlook, to feel that the world is objective, and to realize it's not. You change your outlook in life, you let go. It's to force your emunah to go, to be able to resist Mashiach. And Mashiach is Malchus, which is all about realizing there's nothing but Hashem, and Ol Mibado, which is the total surrender of the ego. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rabbi Sassoon. I apologize for the introduction. It wasn't so. It was last minute, like I said. And me knowing Rabbi Travis a little bit longer than Rabbi Sassoon, I can talk a little bit more about him. Rabbi Travis has been in Israel for over 30 years. He's runs a kollel in Sanhedria and has written many svarim, as you can see, that are on sale and back. And we thank Rabbi Travis for coming. Thank you.
big honor to be here tonight. In fact, I started giving shiurim here in Ramat Beit Shemesh. It's a very, very special community, and it's really a big privilege for us to be speaking here tonight, Rabbi Sassoon and myself. And especially the last year when we spoke, we felt there was a very, very positive energy here, a vibrancy. And the rule is that however attentive and however thirsty the listeners are, that's how the speech goes. And speaking here tonight, I feel that the hearts are really open, and that hopefully we'll be able to accomplish something. I have a great privilege that I'm close to many of the Gedolei Hador, and especially now, if we're looking at what's going on, and we should be. Just today there was another terrorist attack, yesterday, the day before. It's almost become a routine daily event. And we really have to ask ourselves, Hashem is Kel Rachel Mechanan. Hashem's name is Rachel. Chanan is merciful, all merciful. How could it be that this is going on? How could it be? We have to ask ourselves this question. What does Hashem want from us? And we can't answer these questions because we're not Baba Batim of Hashem. We don't know. Hashem's thoughts are very, very deep. But one thing is clear, that every single Gadol in Klal Yisrael, that Rabbi Keshewitz has told me, we are now in Chevli Mashiach. Right? And not only we're in Chevli Mashiach, we're towards the end of Mashiach. I want to share with you a very, very special commentary from the Gra. The Gra can be found in the Sidra Gra on the Kapitel Chaf in Tehillim. We say it between Asher and Avol HaTzion, Lam Netzeach. The Kapitel Lam Netzeach has 70 words. So says the Gra, these 70 words correspond to the 70 years of Chevli Mashiach. And says the Gra, that when we get to the end of Chevli Mashiach, it's the worst. It says, why are they called Chevli Mashiach? Now the men can't empathize with that, but a woman who's given birth, and the Gra says this, that the end of the birth is the most difficult, it's the most traumatic. And says the Vilna Gaon, when we get to the end of Chevli Mashiach, it's going to be the most difficult. Why? Because the Maharal explains that when you have a new creation of the world, and Mashiach is going to be a totally new creation, it's going to be something we never could even dream of before. We're only going to be able to laugh because we won't know how to react to such a thing. It's going to be so incredible. So as we approach that, it has to get more and more and more difficult. It's like a birth. At the very end, it's the most difficult. And that's what we're going through now. There's an amazing statement made by Rav Yochanan in the Gemara in Brachos Daf Gimel. Rav Yochanan had 10 children who were nifta. And Rav Yochanan used to carry the bone of his 10th child in his pocket. He would carry the bone. If anybody was mourning, he would take out the bone and say, look, I had 10 children died. Yet Rabbi Yochanan says that don't put me in the generation before Mashiach comes. Which all the Gedolim have said, that's this generation. We are one step away from Mashiach coming. So ask Rabbi Eli Lapian, how could it be? Rabbi Yochanan went to the death of 10 children, and yet Chevli Mashiach, that was something he couldn't stand up to, and we can stand up to. Says Rabbi Eli Lapian, the difficulty of Chevli Mashiach is the inclarity, the lack of clarity, not knowing what to do. Where are we supposed to go? What are we supposed to do? You know, I'll share with you a story. Last week I was in Hadassah Ein Kerem Hospital, and I had to be there with my wife. She hurt her leg. And I got into an elevator and was there with an Arab. And it looked like he wanted to kill me. He was looking at me like, I would love to kill you. And I was thinking, like, what can I do? And the answer was, there's nothing we could do. Right? Chazal tell us, the only thing we could do is have complete bitachon Hashem. I want to speak tonight. There's a lot to say, and I'm going to try to be very brief because the hour is late. It's Thursday night, and it's Hanukkah. But I'll just tell you from the beginning. I have here 7 articles I put together, and really after the terror started after Sukkot, I started writing an article in Bli Neder. I've accepted myself until Hazrat Hashem Mashiach will come, to try every single week to interview one of the Gedolim and try to get clarity. Because that's what Yochanan said. We're missing that with clarity. If we knew what to do, the Mashiach would be here tomorrow. If we knew what to do and we did it, then we would be here. The Mitzvah Zisharim already reveals this. He says, the Yisod HaChatidus V'Shor Shavodah Tzvim She's Bayer V'Sam Tetzlom Macha Osapalamo, that the Yisod, the foundation of being a tzaddik and righteous, is knowing what to do. When you know what to do, it's easy. And Adam Gutter once told me, he said, Rabbi Yisrael Slander says it's harder to change a midah than learn Shas. He said, it's not so hard to change a midah. it's hard to decide that you want to do it. Once you know what to do, it's easy. So our task tonight, and I'm only starting you off, because B'ezrat Hashem, I'm going to be writing articles every week. They're published in the Atten newspaper in America, and you get them by email. The email is on this tablet, which I hope everyone will take one of them. You could write to a livingonrabbi@gmail.com. It's right here. And there's another one also, livingonrabbi@rabbitravis.org, to get these articles and every week to see what the Gedolim are telling us practically what to do. I'm going to share with you tonight three ideas. I'd like you to try to pick one of them to work on. So as I'm speaking, please listen and which idea speaks to you. To try to accept one of them on yourself tonight, and B'ezrat Hashem, and the schus of doing that, we'll see Mashiach very, very soon. B'ezrat Hashem. Okay. The first thing I want to speak to you, and this is based on two discussions that I had with Rabbi Lehrfeld, with Daniel Lehrfeld. He's the Rosh Yeshiva in Beis Yisrael, in Be'i Yaakov, Yeshiva's Beis Yisrael. He said quite an amazing thing. The Mishnah, as I mentioned to before, the Mishnah is at the end of Sota. The Mishnah lists all the things that are going to happen before Mashiach comes, right? Well, for one thing, we know it says that Eretz Yisrael will have fruit, right? Have fruit, so that we have, right? From thousands, hundreds, if not thousands of years, there was no fruit here. It says also that prices will go up, especially wine will be more expensive. There's many, many simanim. In fact, one of the simanim is there is going to be chutzpah yazkeh. Chutzpah yazkeh. You know what chutzpah yazkeh means? Chutzpah yazkeh means there'll be a tremendous amount of chutzpah. Now, I always have a story I tell. I might have told you here last time, but I'll tell you again because I like telling a story. I was going on a bus, and as I was getting on, the bus driver was in a big rush, so he closed the door on my foot. And it was pretty painful because I had just hurt my foot not long ago, and I was in a lot of pain. And I thought to myself, if I scream at the bus driver, so he's going to scream back at me, and my foot will stay in the door. So I'll just like apologize to him, and hopefully like he'll open the door and let me on the bus. So what happened is, I said, I apologize, but my foot's in the door. Can you open the door? He said, yeah, you're breaking the door of my bus. So I said, I'm really sorry, but it's hurting me. Maybe you can open the door. And he opened the door, and he screamed at me for about like 2 minutes. They almost broke his bus. And then I apologized again, and I paid, and that was it, finished. If I had tried to argue with him, we would like, I'd still be there. But chutzpah yasye, it's chutzpah. This is chutzpah. So many examples that we see chutzpah today. And it's good, because it helps us feel that Mashiach is very close. I'm going to tell you another chutzpah story at the end of this year. You won't believe this story is true, but it's like, wait, but it's amazing. But it's every time you see such a thing, you should feel good. Ah, Mashiach is almost here. The more chutzpah, the closer Mashiach is. Okay. But there's one siman that the Mishnah says over there, which we still are far away from. And that is, the Mishnah says, repeats it a few times, you can look yourself, it's at the end of Sota, Mem Tes, and the base. It says, we have to believe Eilan Olishan Ella Avina Shavishamayim. We have nothing to rely on except Hashem. Now I want to share with you, I get a lot of emails because I write for the newspaper and I give out my email address, so a lot of people write to me. And one woman wrote to me after Hurricane Sandy, and she asked me, Rabbi, she said, everyone's saying now we have to work on our Amuna, because what happened, I have Amuna, I believe in Hashem, right? I said, it's a good question, but I have to tell you, there's levels of Amuna. And what the Mishnah is telling us, Ein lano lishan ela avinu shebishamayim, means 100%, not 99.99, 100%. Yeah? And I had a very beautiful, I think it was a beautiful idea this Shabbos. Why does the Mishnah say avinu shebishamayim? Hashem has many names. He's Yudkei Bavkei, Havaya, Elohim, Kel, Shakai, Tzvakai, many names. Why avinu shebishamayim? I said, you know, I remember when I was young, like when I was 4 or 5, and I tripped over or something, or I needed something, you would say, Daddy, Daddy, you know, your father. This is the one you can really rely on, right? The answer is no. We have to realize you can't rely on your father, and not your parents, and not anybody, right? We hope we can rely on our spouses. But even that, only Hashem. We come to the recognition 100% there's nothing to rely on, not the army, and not the police, and not anybody. Nothing, not ourselves, right? You see, people carry guns. I myself was one of these piguim, right? On Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan, I was traveling to the Levaya of my Mechutin's father, yeah, Rav Slazny from England. And a lot of Boston suddenly had shooting, and the car rams into this man and kills him. And like, it was traumatic, Right? And I thought, like, maybe I'm going to die. I heard bullets coming over my head. This is why I'm called by Malki Israel. And it was traumatic, right? You feel. You're gonna live through this, right? The only way, and like as I repeated about the story with the Arab, the only way you see an Arab, we have, there's an Arab who works in the building where our coal is, and I've told him many times I don't think he should be employed there, but you see these people, they want to kill you. And as Rav Lerfeld pointed out, they don't have any b'chir anymore. You know, if you look at the way they've been educating them for the past 20 years, their math books, their science books, their history books, everything, Jews, they're ganavim, they're thieves, they're vermin, they're disgusting, they ruin our lives, they've been brainwashed. Hashem is now using them as pawns to bring us to a level, a higher level of amunah. That when you walk out on the street, you should know that you need Hashem's protection everywhere you go. And that is what Hashem is trying to do here. He's trying to lift up our amunah. Now, Chazal speak at great length about the great oppression that we'll have from Yishmoel, Pa'achas Hayom, the end of days which we're at now. And it's very, very serious. And we see now it's very serious. Rosh Sternbach told me something this Shabbat. I almost fainted when he told it to me. Obviously you hear it from him. I'm saying it second hand. But anybody who studies Gemara knows the Balei Tosfos, that they're the greatest commentaries, one of the greatest commentaries on the Gemara. And one of the Balei Tosfos called Rabbeinu Ephraim. He wrote a commentary, and it's not printed in the Gemara. Rav Sternbach saw a copy that was in the British Museum of this commentary of Rabbeinu Ephraim. And he writes there, we know we have a Kabbalah from Chazal that the world can only live 6,000 years. It can only exist for 6,000 years. After 6,000 years, it's finished. Mashiach must come by the year 6,000. We're in 76, right? So not much time left. Says Rabbeinu Ephraim wrote that if Mashiach does not come by the year 5700, then there'll be the greatest charon af, anger, divine outpour of anger will happen like it never happened before. 5700 was the year the Holocaust started. Yeah, his words came true. And says Rabbeinu Ephraim, the closer we get to the end, the more Hashem has to take measures that make sure it comes, because coming Mashiach, the tikkun, the creation of the whole world that we're looking for, and it must happen. So what we're seeing now, all of the intense wrath that we're seeing from Yishmoel and the nations of the world are coming out against us, right? Every day it gets worse. They're boycotting Israel, everything that's happening. It's all for one reason. Don't think it has anything to do with the Europeans, they're anti-Semitic, this, that, the other. It's nothing. It has to do with Hashem coming to bring us to a higher level of Amunah. That's what's happening. And we have to recognize that. And lift our Amunah and realize we have nothing to rely on. And that's the first thing. He made a very strong point to Rav Lerfeld. He said, you know, the internet is a very dangerous entity. It has some very good things. It can have some very dangerous properties about it. He said, but one thing it is that it used to be something would happen on the other side of the world. We wouldn't know about it. Maybe never. Right? Some 120 people are killed in France. We know about it instantaneously. The internet is bringing the world into a small place. When Hashem does something, we instantaneously know about it. And that's all to raise up our amunah. Right? This is the first thing. When you hear about a pikua, when you hear what happened, we have to realize there's no safe places, not in the world and not in Eretz Israel. We have to realize the only safe place is to be boteach in Hashem. Right? As Chazal say, ha-boteach v'Hashem chesed yisovavenu. Whoever has complete amun in Hashem, he's surrounded by chesed. He will be protected by chesed, and that's our greatest protection, and that's what's going to bring Yisrael. That's the first idea I want to speak about. By the way, all these three things have to do with our hearts. Chazal tells us, Rachmana libo boy, Hashem wants our hearts. He's working on our hearts, and our hearts should be given over to Hashem. And the first thing is amunah, complete belief in the Kodesh Baruch Hu. The second thing I want to speak to you about is tefillah. And tefillah is something which is very close to me. I've written a number of svarim on tefillah. And actually, I got close to tefillah because our Shana Rishona, we had a difficult Shana Rishona. My father-in-law was Niftarei before he got married. And then I was almost choked to death in Brazil. And then we had a fire and meningitis and pneumonia. And then I was run over by a car. It was a crazy year. And I went to Rav Shlomo Brevda, Zatzal. My Rebbe, he was my Rebbe for 18 years. That was just a few of the things. It was a very traumatic year. I went to Rav Shlomo Brevda, and I spoke to him a number of times. I said, Rebbe, I just can't take it anymore. So many tzaros. And he heard what I said. He said, you know what? Just come back to me tomorrow, and I'll be answer to all your problems. Right? So I'm like, come back tomorrow. Anyway, I came back the next day, and he told me, the answer to your problems is tefillah. He said, I'm going to write you a tefillah, and I promise you, the situation will get better. And it did. It was an amazing thing. And I asked him afterwards if I could print the tefillah. And he said, well, I have a copyright on it. But he didn't, he was joking. But I did. I printed it in my sefarim and Praying with Joy 1 and 2, it's there. And the books, by the way, are 20 shekels each, which is like, I lose money in every book that I sell. But I get some money back from people who sponsored it. But it costs me more than 20 shekels to print it. But I want people to have it, because her brother told me, he said, really, in our generation, we have to work on his tefillah. And the fact that I'll tell us this, it's a period of Rabbi Lezer, you can look it up, it's amazing. Everyone should look it up if they have a chance. It's in Parak Lamed Beis. It says, from the critical Tehillim, Nun Hei Chaf, I think it was Nun Hei Chaf. It says, Vayishma Kel V'yanen. The pasuk says, Hashem will hear them and answer them. So the Pirkei Avot says, why did it say Vayishma Kel V'yanen? Yishma Kel is a Rebbe's Yishmoel. It says, Ba'achas Ayamim, Yishmoel will afflict the Jewish people like no one ever has before, and they'll dive into Hashem, and they'll be answered. Right? So we see, in order for the Geula to come, it has to be through tefillah. It has to be tefillah. And my Rebbe, Rebbe Zvi Orbach, I write tshuvas from him every week. Right after we had this Pagua that was in Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan, I went to him, I spoke to him, I said, what should we do? What should I do? He said, you have to strengthen tefillah. That's what Hashem wants. Hashem is bringing these saras because he wants tefillah. And he says, tefillah is not just like saying tilim, rotely. He says, because I'll think about a tefillah called sa'ak. Sa'ak is literally a scream. A person has to scream from the deepest depths of his heart. And that's the tefillah that Hashem wants. It doesn't have to be loud. It shakes the whole building. It has to be coming from the deepest depths of your heart. And I want to share with you that twice in my life, I had a situation where I died like that, and immediately I felt the tefillah was answered, and it was. Yeah? One of them is private, I can't tell you. But in one situation, was my book Praying with Joy, in fact. I gave it over to a certain company, I won't mention that it was Archibald, I won't mention that it was, yeah. So, and they rejected it. And they said, I don't think you're going to sell 500 copies of this book, they told me. And I was like devastated. I worked years to write it, and I put my heart into it, and so much. So, I went home, I was like crying and crying to Hashem. I said, Hashem, please help me. I put so much work in it, and I felt so devastated. And then, like, as I was davening and crying, I felt like the tefillahs were answered. And suddenly, like, I had this idea. I'm going to change around the whole format, made some changes in this, made it a daily book, and this. And then we put it out, and we sold already 25,000 copies. Right? So, you know, I always thank Art Scroll for, like, putting me down like that. I have to give them some royalties. But in any event, that's the idea of Sokka. Sokka is a deep tefillah that comes from your heart, and you really mean it. Complete sincerity, like, it's so important. Right? And that's what Hashem wants now. And I just want to share with you one point. That in each of these piguim, you know, you hear the radio and say, it was one, this one's killed, or this one's stabbed, this one. And, you know, almost, it comes like a daily thing, we almost lose our sensitivity to it. So that's one of the worst things possible. Right? Rosh Sternbach told me from the Brisk Rav, he said, part of the Nisoyin is empathizing with the tzaras of what Klal Yisrael is going through. You know, if Rabbanu Litzlan was one of our children or one of our brothers or our parents, we'd be devastated by that. I have a personal experience. When the Har Nof massacre took place, these were all my closest friends. Rabbi Levine was a Talmud of my Kollel, and Rabbi Kapinski is like one of my closest friends for many years, and of course he's a Rebbe in my yeshiva, and then Rav Goldberg is my son-in-law's cousin, and I heard these great tzaddik were nifter, and I was devastated. But the truth is that whenever a Jew is killed or hurt or injured, we should be devastated, we should feel it, we should turn to Hashem with tefillah and ask Him to end this, because that's what He wants. Hashem is bringing this to one thing. So I want to share with you very quickly, I'm going to be brief here, and this is an article, this is from Rav Shlomo Safani. Shlomo Safani is one of the, I understand, he's one of the upcoming Sephardi Gedolei Hador. He's a Rav in 50 shuls, I think, and even Rabbi Beit Shemesh, he's a Rav of a number of shuls. And he said a beautiful, beautiful idea about this idea of davening to Hashem with tzaras. The Medrash, and I'll finish on my one point there, this, the Medrash says, a mashal. He says, what's it like Hashem brings a tzaras? Wow. It's like this story about a princess. She was attacked by robbers And there happened to be a king traveling through a kingdom where she was a princess, and he saved her. And the Medrash says that after he saved her, he wanted to marry her. And he tried to get her to talk, but she was quiet. She wouldn't speak. And he really wanted to hear her voice. She wouldn't speak, and he tried everything he could. And finally, he said, out of desperation, he said, no. He got the bandits to come back and attack her again. And she screamed. And he said, ah, that was the voice I wanted to hear. So says the Medrash, that is the mashal to Hashem and our tefillahs. Says Klal Yisrael in Mitzrayim, they said the gula only came because we cried out to Hashem. In order to have the gula, you have to cry out to Hashem. You have to talk to Hashem from the depth of your hearts. Yeah, that's why the gula came. Hashem, when we left Mitzrayim, we stopped davening. Hashem brought us the Kriyas Yamsuf. The Yamsuf, He brought scorpions and snakes and the Mitzrim and the Yam, and there was nothing we could do. We cried out to Hashem. Says the Medrash, that's like the bandits coming and attacking us again. Hashem wants our tefillahs, so He brings us into tzaras to get our tefillahs, because He's like squeezing the tefillahs out of us. And now we have to know, when Hashem brings us tzaras, because He wants us to daven to Him, He wants us to daven to Him, like we said in the first part of the shiur, there's no hope except for Hashem, that's the tefillahs we should be davening to Hashem. One more point, and I'm going to finish with that, is one more Gemara. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, it says that when the times of Mashiach, right before he comes, and by the way, the Chafetz Chaim, right before his Niftar, he said that it was right around the time of World War II. So this is the beginning of Chavetz Mashiach. That was just about 70 years ago. And as the Gaon says, 70 years of Chavetz Mashiach. We're just about in the 70th year right now. And also Chazal tell us that Motzi Shmita is the most opportune time for the Gula to come. It's a Gemara in Sanhedrin and Megillah, right? Because after a whole year of Shemitah, we're lifted up in our Amunah B'Tachon, and we're right now at the most matin point, maybe in history, for the Gula to come. If we make our change in ourselves, then it's almost, we're so close. And I'm going to finish off in a minute with this. So, the Gemara says that if we want to be saved from Chevli Mashiach, L'sa'atik b'torah b'milat chasadim. So, Rishon Bar told me, L'sa'atik, the Chafetz Chaim explains, Asik is a business. So if you want to be, you want Mashiach to come, you have to make chesed into your business, right? And I was once speaking to a very wealthy individual about support my kolel. It was very interesting. He had two headphones on at the same time. He was on two phone calls at the same time. And he was signing two contracts. And he said, that's like with Chaim Moser, you just do four things at the same time. When it's your business, you do it. And I want to share with you, I don't know, maybe I told you something last year, but I carry around a check. And it's a check, it's quite a big check. It's a check for $100,000. So you're playing, wow, $100,000 check, but I wrote it to myself. I'll tell you a story. It says, I give a shiur every week on Mishlevatan, the internet on turningtime.com. And the Pasuk says that if you look for a Torah like Kesef and Zav, then you'll find it. I said, so if someone gave me $100,000 to learn for 5 minutes or to do a mitzvah, I would do it. So every time I put on tefillin in the morning, I look at that check and think, if someone's paying $100,000, I should do it with kavanah. So certainly the schar that we're getting. But in any event, we have to treat our Torah and Chesed like it's a business. And I asked Rav David Koyim, who by the way, Shach said he's the Gadol Hador, the Ashkenazi Gadol Hador of the next generation. He was also our Shadchan. He invited my wife and I to Shabbat at the same time, and that's how we met. But, so he said, I asked him, like, so what are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to, like, leave Yeshiva and just start doing Chesed all the time? I said, no. He says, the halacha is how to do Chesed. If you're learning, you don't stop. If someone else can do it and someone else can't do it, then you do stop. So he said, what does Hashem want for us? He said one word in Hebrew, right? It's ichpatiut. Ichpatiut means caring about other people. Caring about other people. Just, that's the biggest chesed we could do. Care about people. Say hello, say good morning. I always tell the story of my friend, Rabdo Brizak. You know him probably. He's here on Beis Shemesh once a week. So he's walking. Yeah, is he here? Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, he's connected, right? With Greensburg. So he was walking down the street in Givat Shaul, and he met a guy who looked depressed. He said good morning to him. And he walked a few more steps. He said, this guy's depressed. I have to help him. The guy was on his way to commit suicide. He convinced him out of killing himself. And that is the great chesed of ichpatiut. We don't know the great ramifications of what we do. And one of my chavrusas, he told me, he once got a ticket in the mail for a wedding to England from Israel. He said, I better go. I don't even know who the person is. It turned out that when he was in yeshiva, we were in yeshiva together, this guy was like very frustrated. He was about to leave yeshiva and dump everything, not be religious anymore. He came up to him, he put his arm around him. He said, can I help you? He said, because of that, I stayed in yeshiva, and because of that, my first daughter is getting married, so religious. So we don't know the great ramifications of ichbatiyut, of caring about other people, of expressing concern, and that is the great chesed that we do. He said, that's what's going to bring Mashiach, caring about other people. Rabbi Rebbe used to tell my wife, you know, people today, they give a cake for a Shalom Zucker, and they feel, ah, I did some chesed. That's not chesed, right? You tell somebody, you know, how are you, how are you feeling? You know, I noticed you look a little down, maybe I could do something for you. My wife's a shatran, so she called up a certain girl who she got a profile, and she said, I like your profile, I want to help you. And the girl was like amazed. She said, you made me feel so good, you know? And these are the type of things that's what's going to bring Mashiach, that's what you have to do. Now I'm just about finished this year. I have to tell you one story, which I wasn't sure if I was going to tell you this story. I told you I was going to tell you a story about chutzpah, but this is like the biggest chutzpah ever, perhaps on planet Earth. So I'm going to share it with you. Because I'm from New York, I also have chutzpah. But so that's what Mrs. Clinton said when she became senator of New York. She said, I learned a new word now, chutzpah. But this is not funny. This story is very sad. But I'll tell it to you anyway. We should learn from it, and hopefully we'll learn not to do what happened. I was a shatran, and she got. Now I spoke to Rav David Cohen about this. I said, you know, I believe one of the major problems here in Israel is the relationship between Sephardim and Ashkenazim, right? And the Chazani said that the Ashkenazim have to pay atid l'tenis adin for the way they treat Sephardim. So he said, you're right, but very hard to change. He said, I can't give a whole shit about it, but I can mention you. He said, that's right. So I'm going to tell you this story. My wife, she was trying to work on a certain shidduch. The boy was Ashkenazi, and the girl was, mother was Sephardi, father was Ashkenazi. She suggests a shidduch, and the mother says, I don't understand the suggestion. She said, do you want my son to marry a baboon? Right? Now, when I heard the story, I said, and Mashiach's going to come in our generation with people saying some things, people feeling like that. Okay, I'm sure nobody here feels like that, or they wouldn't be at Mashiach, right? But we have to realize that how low we've sunk and how high we could get. A Jew could reach the highest levels, we could be greater than Malachim, right? The Vilna Gaon says, somebody keeps his mouth quiet, and this lady, if you ask me, I think she should just shut up for the rest of her life. But they can reach a level higher than any Malach has ever reached, just by being quiet, not saying Lashon Hara. Right? And at the same time, as the Gemara says, when we fall low, we fall all the way down. And it's a great problem in Klal Yisrael. There are other problems, but we have to raise ourselves up and do the opposite. If we create an avira of chesed, ichbatiyut, caring, recognizing people's greatness. Somebody who knows what a Jew is would never make such a statement. Yeah, because no matter, you know, you don't want to marry somebody because they have bitter and hug, and that's fine. Everybody's entitled to marry who they want. But to make such a statement, yeah, I'll just tell you another story while we're telling stories. I was by the Kapinsky Shiva, not Rabbi Kapinsky, but 2 years before his daughter was Nifter, and somebody said, yeah, they said, you know, your daughter's Nifter, we have other children, why don't you just get on with life? And I wanted to punch the guy in the face. I said, I think Eo's friends made a statement like that. And I realized when he said that, he's not a bad person, he's just an idiot. But people are just uneducated. They don't know how to make people feel good, how to say the right thing. And we have to learn that and understand what the needs are of the generation, what we have to say and what you shouldn't say. Right? And if you have some stupid ideologies like these women, at least shut up and don't say it. You know, use your intelligence. The Gemara says, shtika betray, right? Dibor b'chad v'shtika betray. It's more valuable to be quiet, because then you don't portray how stupid you are. So, this is something we have to learn. Three things we spoke about here tonight. And they all have to do with the heart. Number one, we have to raise our level of bitachon, 100% bitachon in Hashem. Not 99.99, 100%. Which means, you go out on the street, and you see some Arabs working there, and you're nervous, just keep walking, and have 100% emun in Hashem. Hashem will take care of me. Eilan Alishan Elubin and Shabbat Shemayim. That's number one. Number two is our tefillahs. Our tefillahs have to change. You know? Look, I'm also guilty. I start Shemona Esrei and then I'm finished. What happened to the 16 middle brothers? Right? We space out sometimes. We have a lot in our minds. And, you know, we're a generation who are used to, you know, 3 second, you know, things. We have very short attention spans. We have to try attention. We have to realize that tefillah is our greatest salvation. It's the most powerful thing that we have, right? The pasuk says, "Eilu berecha ve'eilu besusa v'nachem shem Hashem Elokim nazkir." Right? Someone once says, like, they have a pea shooter, right? We have tefila. They have an atomic bomb, and we have tefila. What makes the atomic bomb blow up? It's the blood of Hashem. We have something much stronger than tefila. And finally, chesed, but real chesed. This atik bechesed means start caring about people. Show your expression of concern for people. Don't say stupid things which insult people. Yeah, and b'zrat Hashem, pick one of those three things. Be mechazik in it for the rest of Hanukkah, at least, and then maybe for a month, and then move on to other things. This is what's going to bring the geula, and we're so close. Yeah, when the Hanukkah massacre took place, they went to Chaim Kineski. He said Mashiach is in the doorway, right there. We just have to ask him to come in. And how do you ask him to come in? These things that I'm telling you, right? And the other things, right? That's why I took on myself to put out this email every week, and there's no charge for it. Just write to either to livingonrabbi@gmail.com, or there's another address here, livingonrabbi@rabbitravis.org, and encourage, please, other people to read these things, because the Gedolim are taking time to speak, and I'm taking time to write it. So please listen and hear what they have to say. We're so, so close. I'll finish with one word that I heard from Moshe Sternbach. He said such a beautiful idea. You can find it, he's speaking at length in this first article. He said, you know, in Pinchas, when Kasbi and Zimri were choyte, you know the story in Bamidbar. So, Klal Yisrael, the entire nation was in danger. And I'm finishing with this point. The entire nation was in danger, and Pinchas got up, and he killed it, and saved the whole Klal Yisrael. He said, today, it could be that one person could be the Pinchas. It could be a Nisoyan, maybe a machlokas with somebody, or, you know, you're not getting along with somebody, or maybe there's a maisa chesed that you really have to do, but it's hard for you to do it, or tefillah is very hard, you know, you have so much on your mind, and you push everything away, you daven. It could be that one action is like the Pinchas that's going to bring the gula. And when it happens, when you bring the gula, you'll get the schar for saving the entire Jewish people to bring the gula. So he said, we all have to realize that. None of us realize our true godness. We could, each one of us could be a Pinchas. So I give a bracha to everybody that they should realize their true inner strengths. We should realize we have to do it this time, especially in Hanukkah. There's so much ore, so much potential, so much closeness to Hashem, especially in these areas. Amunah, Tefillah, and Chesed, these were things that we saw from the Chashanoyim. We saw it being Hanukkah. Hashem should help us. Please take on one of these areas, and please take one of these articles. There, I'm asking 5 shekels for it. If you can't afford that, please take it for free. And the books over there, they're being sold basically at cost price. And also, we have some of these cards left we gave out last time from the Sasson family about Simchat Chinam. I wish everyone a great Hanukkah and a good Meshua and Bracha Hatzlag for Kol Yom. Thank you. Thank you.